Step 2 of the 4-step formula is O for overcome. How do you overcome the weight of hopelessness, disappointment, fear, and all the other emotions that seem to control our lives? Truth sets you free. Here's more from Lori.
Welcome to Hope101.net, where you will find a voice of hope for your hurting heart. I'm your host, Lori Boroff, and my guest today experienced a hurting heart when her happily ever after marriage crumbled into 1,000 pieces as she was served divorce papers. She found herself a single mom, raising children, 7 children, and faced the challenge of rewriting her fairy tale life. My guest is inspirational speaker and author Peggy Sue Wells. She's the author of dozens of books and thousands of articles published in familiar magazines like Focus on the Family, In Touch magazine, and Christian Communicator, just to name a few. Today we're going to talk with Peggy Sue Wells about rediscovering your happily ever after, moving from hopeless to hopeful as a newly divorced mother, which is the title of her book, Rediscovering Your Happily Ever After. Welcome, Peggy Sue.
Thank you, Lori. It's great and a delight to be with you.
I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to bring hope and encouragement to so many who are experiencing or have already had the shattered dreams of living happily ever after. Divorce is probably never a chapter we write into our own lives when we say, I do. So, Peggy Sue, you say that you had to rewrite your fairy tale. So share your story with us.
I did. And again, nobody walks down the aisle ever thinking that this is going to end in divorce. And sadly, our statistics right now are showing that over 50% of marriages, and that's both in the church and out of the church, are ending in divorce. So it's you know, you can't open a car door anymore without hitting a mom who is a single mom now through divorce. So there's too much of it going along and going around, and it is very hurtful, and it's hurtful for the children. And so we sit there, you know, with our broken heart, and then we've got these children that are, you know, clueless as to what's going on and wondering if they were somehow a part of the reason for their parents breaking up. So the purpose of my book was to say, okay, I personally have 7 children, and I needed to buck up to the point that I could provide them with a very nurturing and positive and forward-moving environment for them, because they needed to be able to move forward, and I needed to be able to move forward and to nurture them in a good place so they could still, you know, have a good launching pad for the rest of their lives.
That's a huge responsibility. Is, you know, just being a single woman on getting divorced, you know, that might be a little easier to handle. I don't know. But when you have kids, 7 kids, that had to be very frightening. And I know that when I look at your book, I love your book. I love how it's laid out, with each chapter being off of a fairy tale. And in chapter 2, Mirror to Mirror, you talk about your losses. And you give a refreshingly honest look at your pain, as opposed to just avoiding pain or rationalizing it like we do when we want to protect ourselves. And so out of Mirror, Mirror, you asked yourself a vulnerable question. Who am I? What did you find out when you looked in the mirror?
Yeah, you know, exactly. I was not the same person that I had been when I had been Mrs. I was now not Mrs. anymore. So who am I? And, you know, the loss of the marriage triggered, you know, really a never-ending list of losses, everything from identity to spouse to those dreams of happily ever after. I used to dream about sitting out on the front porch rocking grandbabies and eating ice cream, and those things change. There's an honesty level between, you know, spouses that used to be there that's not there anymore. There's an honesty between children, because the children sometimes now are in a place where they can't always tell one parent something about the other parent, because they know that what they say is going to trigger sometimes some very dramatic emotional reactions. So it was something that really was just a big look in the mirror for me to realize that things had changed, and also some of those things that were hidden behind being a couple, now I had to be personally responsible for myself and for my reactions, and for my happiness and for where my state of life was as far as financially and spiritually and my state of happiness. All those things now were my responsibility, and it was time for me to put on my big girl panties and deal with it.
Well, then how did you move forward? How does a mom move forward with her new life?
You know what? That is probably worth the price of this book is the very first chapter, and it's my favorite chapter because it is the five things that a mom can do by noon to move her life forward. And these were things that, you know, it all came down to me. I can demand somebody else change, but I can't change them. The person that I can only affect is myself, and that's what I had to do. And it meant looking in the mirror and realizing I had to stop blaming. As long as I was blaming, whether it's my parents, the ex, another woman, you name it, as long as I blamed someone else for my situation, I stayed absolutely stuck. And as long as I used the anger that I felt from the betrayal of the vows that were broken, as long as I used those in a deconstructive manner, I also stayed very stuck and I stayed very unhappy and I was miserable for anybody else to be around. So it was turning that anger around and saying, I'm going to use this for something constructive. God says, be angry and sin not. The anger is not the problem. It's what I choose to do with it. The anger is an extra a dose of adrenaline that God gives to us so that we can right a wrong. That's why he gives us the gift of anger. And so I had to say, you know, did I want to bash out somebody's windshield? Yes. Was that a good thing to do? Absolutely not. So was I going to take my anger then and turn it into being something that was very constructive to our situation? The other thing that I had to look at was what sort of friends had I surrounded myself with? Were there people that were letting me stay in my pity parties, or were they people that were going to say, okay, go ahead and vent, girlfriend. You got 5 minutes or 35 minutes over a lunch hour. And then, okay, so what? Now what? Let's move forward. And it was also the idea of taking personal responsibility. And I will tell you, that was the hardest thing for me to do. Growing up female, I had parents, you know, that we expect to take care of us when we're young. Then we have a husband that we think is going to take care of us when we're, you know, married. And I realized I had to take responsibility for myself and for my situation. That was probably the hardest thing, but the thing that helped me move forward the best.
Just when you talk about your anger, I think that so many times anger comes out of unmet expectations, right? And you had that expectation to live happily ever after, and it didn't happen. And I hear you say, I want to understand this, that it's okay to be angry. It's just what you do with it that matters.
Exactly. One of the best examples is Carrie Lickner. There was the gal that was killed by a drunk driver, and her mother obviously was angry about that, especially when she found out that this guy had been picked up several times for driving drunk. And so she took that anger and boxed it and used it for something that was constructive, and she established Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And so she took her anger and used it for something that was very positive that has saved other lives since then. The other thing was about, you mentioned the expectations. I also, that was one of the things that's in the first chapter, I had to release people from my very huge expectations of how I thought they needed to behave, what I thought they needed to do or be or say, and just allow them to be who they are, which is exactly what I want people to do for me. I don't want people to have expectations of me because I'm going to always disappoint. So when I could release someone and say, this is who this person is, allow them to be there, accept them for who they are, then I wasn't offended on a perpetual basis. And so each of the five steps that I put in the first chapter of things to move forward, I also put in there a checkpoint. So I could tell when I was having very high expectations and not allowing someone to be exactly who they were, when I was expecting them to behave a particular way, I realized that my checkpoint for that was I was easily offended. I was offended, you know, perpetually about how this person did or didn't do what I thought they should. So that was my checkpoint to know that I needed to release that and release that expectation and just accept who they were and allow them to be where they were. And this worked really well with my children. One of the things that we had to do for each other is we had to give each other permission to be where we were for that moment in regards to the situation. And there were times that one of my children would be hopeful, one of my children would be optimistic, another child would be deeply wounded and hurt, another child would be very angry. And so we had to, at that point, say, we will allow you to have the freedom to be and to feel exactly how you're feeling. The only codicil to that was, you can't take your anger and your hurt out on us. We will love you where you are, but we're not going to, you know, take bad treatment because of your feeling badly and you want to take it out on somebody else. But, you know, during these situations, it affects each of the children differently. And there's sometimes one child is treated differently by a parent than another one. And so there were all kinds of emotions all over the map. The other thing that we did was we journaled with each other. I would put a blank book next to the children's beds. And when they wanted to write something, sometimes it was easier for them to express it through writing than to speak it. They would write something. I never judged any sort of grammar or spelling. They would just pour out their heart, put the blank book next to my bed, and then I would read it, and then I would answer them back and put it back next to their bed. And there were times that, you know, they had deep questions like, does Dad love me, you know, and where's God in all of this? They were deep questions that we were all working through. And so we could talk about those together in those journals. Other times the journals just sat and collected dust because things were motoring along okay. And then one day I would find a journal next to my bed again because somebody had a question that they wanted to talk about.
That is a great idea. I wanted to ask you about forgiveness. How did you tackle that?
Yeah, you know what? That is the big one, because we don't want to forgive. And obviously, a lot of times someone has deeply wronged us and betrayed us in big, huge ways. And forgiveness, what I realized, is not about the other person. Forgiveness is me going to God and saying, this person possibly betrayed me in a very terrible, hurtful way, and they owe me perhaps a large debt, and I'm going to turn this over to you, God. I'm going to give it to you. Now you deal with them, the debt, the issue, the betrayal is now between you and them. So I'm going to release this, I'm going to give it to God, and I'm going to let that person go from my holding them accountable. And the thing that happens in that is that I'm the one who is set free from the trap, from holding all this ugliness inside. It releases me then to move forward. Forgiveness is a one-sided thing. It is something that I do and I do alone. And sometimes I have to do it minute by minute. Sometimes it's day by day. Sometimes I've forgiven something and it goes along for a while. But in a divorce situation, that spouse is still around. So there are continual hurts that will come and they will just stack on top of the other ones. And it's, again, release it, release it, release it. And that sets me free. Reconciliation is a whole different animal. Reconciliation is when I can reconcile with the other person, that we can come to an agreement together, we can forgive each other, and then we can be back in a relationship. Sometimes that works. A lot of times it doesn't, in which case it's just about me being able to forgive, because otherwise when I don't forgive, I become bitter and contentious, which is what God talks about in Proverbs. And a bitter and contentious woman, nobody wants to be around. In my book, I call that a fun sucker. Those are the women, and we know them. They walk into a room and suck all the good air right out of it. Any sort of happiness, any sort of fun, is just sucked right out because that person comes in carrying this big load of bitterness and contention. And I don't want to be that kind of person. I want to be the kind of mom that my kids enjoy coming home to when they're out on their own. I want to be the kind of mom that they enjoy being around. I want to establish a kind of home for them that they feel like this is a haven from the world and that they're glad to be here.
One of the things I learned about forgiveness was not just forgiving for what the person did, but for the pain that it caused. And that just was a huge release when you get honest with that pain and forgive them for the, like you said, betrayal and the, you know, the hurt and the not listening, you know, just not being listened to, and the anger and disappointment and all that. So forgiveness is really a key to move forward, isn't it?
It is, and it's a very, you know, and I'm not going to, you know, tell anybody that it's easy, because it's not. I will tell you, though, that when I did make the shift, you know, it was like I come right up against the wall, and it was hard, 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 and then when I finally just did it, And sometimes it was almost, you know, with teeth gritted and, you know, okay, God, I'm going to do this just because I'm going to do it because it's the right thing to do. When I would finally make the shift, it was like such a release and it was a relief. But yeah, I'm not going to tell anybody it was really easy because sometimes it's not. And you're right about, you know, the pain that it causes. And sometimes in order to actually be able to do the forgiveness properly, I had to take stock of and list out just how deep and how widespread that pain went. So then I could look at exactly what I was forgiving. You know, it had to be a deep, honest, open accountability between myself and what I was going to let go of.
Oh, Peggy Sue, our time is running short. You've got so much to tell the listeners today, but our time is running short. I want to know, though, did you find joy? Peggy Sue Wells will answer that question later on in the program, and she will also share something that she did that helped her move forward in her journey. Right now, I'd like to invite you to join us for Step 3, P for Purpose, Finding Purpose in Our Pain. Peggy Sue Wells is back with us, and you won't want to miss this interview as she tells four practices to practice when you're in the pit of pain and how she found purpose in her pain. So join us for Step 3, Finding Purpose in Your Pain.
So glad you are staying with us. Hope is good for your body, soul, and spirit. Step 3 of the 4-step formula is P for Purpose. Join host and Hope Coach Lori Borup as she helps you discover purpose in your pain.
We're back on Step 3, P for Purpose, Finding Purpose in Our Pain. Peggy Sue Wells is joining us again to share her story about how she has found purpose in her pain. So, Peggy, thanks for coming back to join us again.
It's my pleasure, Lori. I really appreciate your ministry.
Well, you know, we just want to spread hope around the world. We want to be a voice of hope because everybody needs hope. And so I appreciate you being on the show today. Peggy, how have you found purpose in your pain?
You know, I remember my brother calling one time from across the nation, and he calls up and he says, "Hey, how you doing?" And, you know, it was a common courtesy question. He expected me to say, "Fine, thanks, and you?" But my reply was, "It hurts so bad, I can't breathe. The pain gets absolutely down to the core, and it's very, very hard." I've also found that in the pain, though, it becomes an opportunity. And so it's like, what am I going to do with this opportunity of being in this position at this point? Pain is a raw and vulnerable place to be, and it's incredibly isolating. But I also found that that's the time where God has me all to himself. And what I did with that many times was I would just climb up on God's lap. I would close my eyes and climb up onto his lap. And I would sit there and let him put his big arms around me. I would rest my head against his chest so I could hear his heartbeat and just be. And it was like allowing him to make real to me all those wonderful things that he says in scripture to me about how he will never leave me or forsake me. He will always be there, that I'm precious to him, that he loves me. And you know, in the deep pain, I was surprised to see people that I thought were very, very close to me who actually distanced themselves. And because I was in pain and very vulnerable, I took that to mean that that was more rejection in my life. On the other side of it, I've come to realize that a lot of times that actually said more about them than it said about me. They have their own things that they're going through. They have their own emotional triggers. I was also surprised at some of the people that did come alongside that I had never, you know, anticipated would do that. But again, it was because there was something there that they identified with. They had walked a similar journey. So there's always that opportunity when we have experienced something then to be able to recognize when somebody else is going through the same so that we can come alongside them. And like you said, when people are in deep pain like that, what I need, what they need is what you exactly said earlier. And that is that we need hope, and we need hope far deeper than we need advice. pain is something that distills away the unimportant things in our lives, and it gets down to those vital things, that what is really important and what really counts. And there were times when I was in the deep pain that I would sit there with God, sometimes just Him and I so alone, and it's like, okay, what do you want me to do? What is my purpose? What is my significance? And He would just speak, and He'd say, Peggy Sue, what is in your hand? What have I put in your hand? And a lot of times that would be, it's my children, it's my home, it's my family, perhaps it's someone else that I can come alongside. It's the skills and the talents and the dreams that He's given to me. So it kind of lasers on to some of the more important things in life. One of the other things that I did in the pain was I learned four practices to practice in the pit of pain. And one of them was quiet. In the pit of pain, it's very tempting to turn on the radio, turn on a movie, whatever, to be distracting so I don't feel it. It's not a fun thing to feel. So I would set aside time in the morning while I was getting up, and I would not turn on the radio, not have any other noise going, and I would just listen. I'm like, okay, I need to hear from the Holy Spirit. I need to hear what God is saying to me. So in that quietness, it wasn't even me crying out to Him. It was just me listening, giving Him the chance to speak to me in that place. The second thing, a practice that I did, was study. And of course, that's with the Bible. There's people that have been in, you know, their stories are there in Scripture that come alongside us, and we can go, oh, they understood that pain. Naomi made some choices in her life that I'm sure caused her incredible pain, and how God redeemed that later on. Joseph in the Old Testament, he's my favorite character. Horrible things happened to him that caused him very, very deep pain. And what was his response? How did he walk through it? How did God show Himself beside him as he walked through it? So study in Scripture was good. The third thing was relationships, and that was populating my inner circle with people that were encouraging, people that were good for me at that point, that were not toxic. And then the fourth practice was to practice positive self-talk. In the pain, the negativity really, really wants to come over like a tsunami and just bulldoze me. And a lot of that comes out in my self-talk. And so I would flip that to tell myself those things that God has said to me in His Word. I had to take the negative out, the stuff I was beating myself up with, and flip it so that I was repeating to myself things that God said to me, such as, I love Ephesians 3:14, where He says, for this reason I kneel before the Father, from whom His whole family in heaven on earth derives its name. I pray that out of His glorious riches He may strengthen you with power through His Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the saints to grasp how wide, how long, how deep, how high is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. When I'm in the pit of pain, I so need that. So that was one of the things that I would just repeat over and over and over again.
So what I hear you saying, Peggy Sue, is that you just drew in closer and closer into a real intimate relationship with, you had that relationship, but you drew closer into that relationship with God by listening, studying, building that relationship, and hearing truth, filling your minds with the truth rather than the lies.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that wasn't my first place that I was wanting to go. I mean, when I'm in the pit, when I'm in pain, I'm angry. I don't like being here. It doesn't feel good. And of course, who am I going to blame? Who am I going to resist? It's going to be God. I mean, after all, He could do anything to fix this. He could change it all. I mean, I understand that He's mighty and powerful. He's chosen for some reason to allow me to be in this place at this time in my life. So initially, I wanted to resist. And of course, when I resist, what do? You know, you just pull away and not have anything to do with Him. I mean, I can't do that. I have to, by my will, turn around and actually run to Him rather than away. It was a huge time of building trust and faith, and to be able to say, okay, in this where I don't get it, or where it, you know, again, it hurts so bad I can't breathe, can I, will I trust that He knows what He's doing, that He is all that He says that He is in my life? Will I have that trust? Will I have that faith to believe that he's got the future ahead of me? When he says he's got plans for a future and a hope, not to harm me, will I have the faith to believe that? So there was a lot of it that, you know, it was that opportunity for me to excel, for me to press into what was truth. But it really was a struggle for me to not fight and go the other way and just go, fine, you know, if that's how you're going to be, you know, what is it? Mother Teresa said, God, if this is how you treat your friends, no wonder you don't have very many. And so I would laugh at things like that because I'm like, oh, she gets it. There were times that she was in pain too. And you know, God is big enough. He can handle our pain. He could also handle when I would say to him, I don't like it here. I don't like what, you know, what I'm doing here. And I don't like that you're not rescuing me out of it. And he was fine with that too.
Well, I know I remember one time when I was in kind of a pit like you. It was not because of divorce, but I had the same pain. I had disappointment, unmet expectations, and rejection and isolation and that kind of thing. And the Lord laid Deuteronomy 33:12 on my heart. And it's an amazing verse because it talks about, it's a big God hug. It talks about what you said about getting into his arms.
Yeah.
It says, listen to this. It's amazing. It says, let the beloved of the Lord rest secure in him, for he shields him all day long. And the one the Lord loves rests between his shoulders. That's hearing his heartbeat. That's being so close that you can hear his heartbeat in between his shoulders.
It's perfect. That's just it. And the other thing that was helpful was journaling, which sometimes I also resist because there's some ugly things that I'm thinking and feeling that I really don't want to put down on paper. But the journaling is good. It gets it out of my head, out of my heart, onto the paper. It's a place to be honest with the Lord, and it's a good way to make the steps through it. In my book, Rediscovering Your Happily Ever After, the last part of that, there's an appendix, and it is a grief journal. And it's got, for 30 days, it's got a great little statement at the top of what people go through when they're in that deep pit of pain, and it allows that to be a trigger for them to then journal about where they are, what's happening, what they're feeling, what they're thinking, and it takes them through step by step through that valley of grief and pain because we can't get out of it. I can't medicate out of it. I mean, people try it all the time, you know, whether it's spending or drugs or alcohol or sex or, you know, whatever other thing we want to try to medicate with. We can't medicate it. We can't get away from it. We can't avoid it. We can't go around it. We can't go under it. We can't go over it. We have to actually go through it. And in the process of doing that, I came to see that Christmas is not just one time a year. Because again, in pain, all the other unimportant stuff gets distilled away. And we're down to the raw kernel, the really important things about life. And one of those things is being able to be generous to other people, to do things that are going to outlive me by generations and decades because I was there to minister and to care full out for someone else at a particular time in their life. I think probably the biggest thing that God taught me were, you know, two of my favorite things that I still hold on to. When I'm in super, super deep pain, the two things that God really showed to me was that whatever is over my head is under his feet. And I needed to know that because it did seem like far bigger than what I could handle. And then also that whatever seems to me to be impossible and being in that kind of pain, it seemed impossible that I would ever get out of it. But anything that seems impossible to me is actually him possible. I put an H in front of the word impossible. So capital H, capital I, capital M. Him possible. He can do anything, even in the depth of deep pain.
Peggy, Peggy Sue, I'm sorry. I love your book. As I read through it, you have a way of putting your words, putting your pain into words. This honest, raw pain goes into words, and you've got it in your book. And it just seems like you thought of everything. In your book, you take, at the end of each chapter, a way to look back, and then a way to move ahead. So you give some practical steps there on how to do that. So Rediscovering Your Happily Ever After, Moving from Hopeless to Hopeful as a Newly Divorced Mother. What are people saying about your book, Peggy? I love it. I love your book, and it's a great resource. And what are people saying to you, women who have read your book?
Yeah, I love hearing feedback. It's like I eat feedback for breakfast. It's like, please tell me what you think. You know, it helps me to grow. It helps me to understand, too. Did I say something that was clear enough that people understood it? You know, because there's just, you know, lots of different ways that people receive mostly what I'm hearing is that it's a very tangible, practical handbook. It gives things that we can do by noon to make a change. When I pick up a book, a nonfiction book, it's generally because I've got questions and I want somebody to help me navigate through a situation that I'm in. So that's what I did with this. I filled it full of, this is something that you can do by noon that's going to shift you out of the uncomfortable place that you are, that's going to make a positive difference in your life for you and for your children. And that's what I'm hearing back. People are saying it is filled with hope. It's filled with helpful tips that they can do right away. I've had married women read it and come back to me. This was a surprise for me, but I had some married ladies read it, come back to me and say, I needed this book because it reminded me that my true love, my romance, the person that I'm looking to is actually more the Lord. And she said, when I focused on putting that relationship with the Lord in its proper place, then I took the pressure off my husband to be my savior and allowed him to just be my husband. And they've said their relationships have greatly improved because of that. So that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing ladies that like to get together once a week or once a month. They're going through the book together. The questions at the end that talk about, you know, look back in your life. What's it looking like now? What's happening? And then this is a suggestion for how to move ahead. They are doing that, and then they're staying accountable to one another once a week, that they meet back the following week, read the next chapter, and then they'll say, okay, how did it go last week? How did you do on your shift to do things differently? And they're creating support groups to help one another, and that brings me a lot of joy because we really do need to go through life in community. I'm seeing, too, that people are – one of my favorite things is that one chapter in here I've talked about with our children is that it's so important for us to find and look for and then to nurture the strengths of our children rather than looking at the negative parts of them. If somebody asks me to be a math major and they criticize me because I'm not good at math, it's just going to be a negative experience. I will never do math. I'm not, you know, created that way. Math is a four-letter word. I mess with words. So if somebody's going to look at my negative aspect and expect that to come up, it's not going to happen. But if they look at me and go, oh, look, you know, you're great with words and the arts, let's go that way, then I'm going to bloom. So I encourage people to do that with their children and give them lots of tips for how to create a nurturing environment for the children. Because, you know, we're all coming out of a divorce situation incredibly wounded, and the wounds don't go away. They keep reopening with every holiday, every phone call sometimes, every visit. It's just, you know, so many things trigger a lot of pain that it just never ends. And so being able to come alongside our children, create a nurturing environment for them in the home where they can grow, where they can be secure, where they know that they're loved, where they have a voice, those things are so vital. And as women, we have to put aside sometimes the journey that we're on and the pain that we're in order to say, I'm going to, despite the pain, do what's best for my children. One of the things that the book reminds us to do, too, is a lot of times in a divorce situation, the parents actually become very immature, and the children end up stepping into being the mature people in the relationship, and that's not their place. It's not ever something that they should have to do. So it reminds us that, you know what, I'm a mom, and it's time for me to put on my big girl panties, and it's time for me to be a good mom that takes care of my children, because that's what God has put in my hands to do.
Well, and that's another total aspect of your book, Rediscovering Your Happily Ever After, is that you do focus on the kids, because lots of times divorce, there is kids involved. And so you really cover that in your book. And I'm just so happy to have you share about your journey. You had an incredible mess, and God turned it into a message for a lot of people. And thank you for being on the show today, Peggy Sue.
Thank you so much for your time, Lori. It was a pleasure.
And again, people can find your book and go to your website, which is?
Absolutely, www.peggysuewells.com. You can reach me if anybody wants to communicate back and forth. My email is just peggysuewells@gmail.com. The book is available on Amazon. You can order it through any bookstore. But yeah, it's very much out there right now. And short chapters, but they hit you right where you live, and it's good stuff. It was, you know, it was one of those things where I had to sit down at the computer, open a vein, and literally bleed. And
when I sent my first chapter to one of my daughters, she sent it back to me and she said, Mom, you have to be so raw and vulnerable that you have a right to speak into somebody's life. So she says, you have to write in there those times that you were curled up in the fetal position on the bathroom floor because you couldn't move because you hurt so bad. She said, you have to put that in there. And it was a great challenge, and she was absolutely right. So that's what's there.
Well, thank you, Peggy Sue. Maybe we can have you back on the show another time. Thanks for being here.
I would be delighted. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Step 4 of the 4-Step Formula, H-O-P-E. E is for enjoy. Life isn't always funny, but laughter is good medicine. After applying Steps 1, 2, and 3, you will enjoy a changed life. We close the weekly program with a little joy for your journey. And remember, share hope101.net with your friends.
Hope101.net is all about helping you find hope. And when you find hope, you can begin to enjoy your journey. Well, earlier in the program, I asked Peggy Sue Wells if she found joy. And I know you've been waiting for her answer, so here's Peggy Sue.
I did find joy, and I would say to any woman who's out there that we're just like, oh my gosh, I just so orbited this person, now I don't know who I am. Get your own little journal, and for like a month or two or three, just write down all those things that the smells that you like and the tastes that you like and the things that make you laugh and the things that make you giggle and the things that you've always wanted to do that you never did, and start finding yourself again and go do those things. You will so start opening up just like that flower that blooms.
Got to look at the little things, don't you, and appreciate the little things that we have. So your book, Rediscovering Your Happily Ever After, is really a resource for a newly divorced mother. I love your biblical perspective and all the advice that gives step-by-step how to deal with emotional and how to improve your emotional and spiritual health through such a hard time. And it's so vital to have that when you've got little kids to take care of, isn't it?
Those babies need us. They need us whole. They need us healthy. And they need us that we are being very positive and moving forward for them.
Peggy Sue, I see that you are available to speak in schools, colleges, universities, retreats, and conferences. How can people contact you?
You know what? Go to my website, www.peggysuewells.com. Contact me there, and I would be delighted to come and talk to your group and really just help everybody to start moving forward with their life. Wherever you're stuck at, you don't have to stay there.
Great, great news. So Rediscovering Your Happily Ever After, and I assume that's sold in major bookstores?
It is in major bookstores. You can get it off Amazon.com. But yeah, any bookstore can get it for you.
Okay, Peggy Sue, thank you so much for sharing your heart and your journey and just helping other women know that they can get through the storm and have a new fairy tale, have a new story written. It doesn't have to be the end, does it?
Not at all. Just the beginning of your new chapter.
Right. Thank you, Peggy Sue. And I'd love to have you back sometime when we have more time.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for your time, Lori.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Peggy Sue Wells did find joy on her journey, and you can too. So don't give up hope. You have hope. It just gets buried under all the mess, under all the pain. And as you process your pain, you do find joy on your journey. Peggy Sue had talked about journaling and how that helped her. Well, I want to help you get started on that journey. So, I have a couple things for you. The first thing is a link right here to 10 Tips to Journal Writing. This will help you just kind of get going on that. And I want to offer that to you just to say thank you and for being here and to help you get started on that writing journey. Also, maybe you need a journal. Maybe you don't even have a journal yet. You can go to hope101store.net and you can do a search, put in journals, and it'll pull up some great journals for you. I like to pick a journal that fits my personality or maybe fits the season I'm in, the place that I'm in right now. The cover will speak to me, or maybe there's a verse on the cover that will speak to me, and it just is that reminder. Of course, I like the journals on hope101store.net that say hope. And so maybe that's just the right one for where you're at right now. If you're listening to this show and you're needing hope as you go through the difficult time of being divorced, or maybe it's been a couple years and you're still struggling. So those resources are there for you at hope101store.net, as well as Peggy Sue Wells' book is on there too. So you can get everything at once right there at the store. Please share this show with your friends who are going through a difficult time. The show is on for a week, and then it gets archived. So if you can't find it here right away, go to the recent show page, and there'll be a link for look for show 11, July 8th, 2011. And that link will be there with the entire show for your friends. So thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week on hope101.net.